Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week, which means another episode of the Women on War podcast. I am the co-host, Melissa Atkins.
And I am your other co-host, Jillian Drapla. And if you don't know who we are, shame on you. No, I'm kidding. If you don't know who we are your two not-so-average museum gals who just get together once a week to talk military history, war history, obscure wars, all while slinging some drink. Slinging some drinks and having a few jokes. Both. I'm.
Cheers.
Having a drink. Cheers.
It's okay. We've already been laughing a whole lot before recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back though. Ooh. But, yes. But Alyssa, what are you drinking?
My go-to, which is always Jameson and some type of Simple Times mixers because they're so good. This one is like a peach iced tea cold brew kind of thing. It tastes really good. It tastes very like summery and springy, which I don't know about you back in Michigan, but there's buds on the trees. It makes me so happy. So
there are no buds on the trees up here yet. Well, maybe I'm short, so I can't see, but it was 70 degrees today.
Oh, it was 55 here. You suck.
Well, that's not going to last.
That's true. It's Michigan.
It is Michigan. This is what happens when you live in a state shaped like winter apparel.
True that.
So.
True that.
Back, so.
What are you drinking, though?
Well, I'm drinking some, it's a gin and lavender cocktail. But it has a little bit of, like, sparkling water in it and, like, some lemon juice in it. It's delicious.
You fancy. You even have a crown on your glass. You fancy.
This is, like, my cocktail glass. It's from Tavern on the Green in Central New York. So, Central Park.
Clink. That's all I heard.
I've been drinking, friends. So, you know what? Let's just, with that being said, cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Take a little drink. Mm-hmm. And we're going to dive right into this episode. Alyssa, this is like your episode, and I'm so excited about this. I'm so excited to learn from you about this because we are talking about women in combat roles.
Oh, man. There's so much to like dive deep into with this episode, but I'm super excited to really discuss this and like talk about everything. It's definitely more recent history, right? 21st century. But yeah. I'm excited. Let's get to it.
I mean, I feel like it's a great way to tie off Women's History Month, which shouldn't be, you know, construed to one month. Should be all the time. But, you know, I digress. Anyway, so tell us a little bit. Give us like a little bit of background on women's roles in the military. Obviously, we talk about like the WAX, you know, and more of like you know, they did like administrative roles and they did, you know, communications and they freed up men to go fight. But, you know, from our listeners' point of view, where, like, when did women start being allowed into combat roles?
I mean, directly into specific on the ground combat roles wasn't until 2015. So 6 years ago, they were allowed essentially to be in some quote unquote combat roles, but it wasn't, you know, infantry, armor, cavalry, you know, anything along those lines, a chance at Ranger school, even being in what is, I guess, deemed in a prestigious way, the Marines infantry units or divisions, up until, like I said, 6 years ago. So it's pretty interesting. But as we've been kind of talking leading up to, you know, women's roles have changed drastically within the time that they have been allotted or allowed to be in the military. You know, we had, you know, basically angels of the battlefield, such as Annie Etheridge, and then them more so females sticking to that nursing type role. And then eventually in World War I, still pretty similar, maybe some secretarial roles. And then World War II hits, and because of Pearl Harbor, we have FDR opting and, you know, passing and signing all of this type of bills and legislation of May 1942, allowing for women to really start becoming part of the military. Once again, they were still relatively stuck to those traditional roles until we get, you know, the WASP in play. And then even well into like 1950s, and I'll even say Vietnam War, it's still pretty much the same, those specific roles. However, I feel like this has been something that's been a long time coming, is women being more so in these, in, you know, on the ground combat roles, which we don't necessarily, I will say, see as much anymore. There is still some on the ground combat roles, but because of the way our technology has changed over the years, you don't necessarily see that as intense. But I mean, that's a topic for another day. I could easily talk about this forever. So, I mean, that's basically like the synopsis of it, or leading up to it.
I mean, I don't mind like listening, because I, you know, I've had multiple conversations with friends about how, you know, women, the way, like, we're just going to get into it because I've had a drink, but women, like the way our hormones are, people like, you know, I've talked to a lot of friends who are veterans, and they've said that they don't necessarily want women like in combat roles because we're too hormonal. And then they also feel like we would be like a sister to them, so that it would shift their focus from whatever is going on in front of them into more of a, we need to protect her, and then focus on what's going on. So they actually are like, it was really interesting to hear, because they were leaning more towards the side of, you know, we would want to protect the woman first and then focus on what it is. So, and I'm just like, well, you know, I had some thoughts on that. I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, I was relatively rolling my eyes, I'm not going to lie.
That's all you'll be talking
about. I mean, this isn't, and I should like tell everybody, this isn't some feministic viewpoint. I have heavily researched this and have spoken with countless friends and family who have served, both male and female, and try to get their best point of view. And I mean, yes, biologically, men sometimes will go that route. However, when you're going through training, we'll see even like basic training, and it's integrated, you are taught that no matter what, you are a part of one cohesive unit. Everybody's life matters, and that is it. You know, now if you were romantically involved, because you can't necessarily stop that from happening when you're in an integrated unit, or even not even just an integrated unit, when you're around people, like sometimes you can't stop that, especially within close quarters. That might be the case where some people, very few far in between, will kind of go that route. But at the end of the day, when you are in battle with next to people or next to another, you are always just going to try to protect your group, and just your unit, your troop, whatever it is. And I think that's something that really needs to be important and noted. The whole women are hormonal thing literally just needs to be thrown out the door, because have you ever been around a male who's on their man period? They are 30 times worse than females. Just imagine having a whole bunch of grumpy ass dudes, and just no. Like, it's a stupid argument. It's incredibly infuriating and just honestly downright disrespectful, because yes, women do have things called menstrual cycles, which make us a little bit more on edge. However, I think you've noted this too in a couple episodes, like a day or two after a woman's menstrual cycle completely ends, they are so level-headed, they are perfectly keen, they're able to make stressful situations. I mean, but this might be too much for our listeners, and I'm really sorry, but like, if when I'm on my period, nothing changes with me. I'm still very level-headed. I can make very clear, concise decisions. I can look at various strategies and try to figure out what's best and optimal. And I feel like most females really are like that. You know, it's not necessarily that we're all raging assholes. It's just a stupid argument to make it seem more biological approving, or disapproval in that biological realm of why women should not be integrated into these on the ground combat rules.
Yeah. Do you think like those arguments, especially from like different generations, do you think that that is still like hindering women in the military today? Like in like integrating them into combat roles?
I think so, because if we go back to the standards of women in World War II, right, they still had to look relatively feminine. They had, you know, wore lipstick or whatever it was. Most of it was a choice, but even like uniform styles. And that really kind of just continued all throughout the history of the military with women becoming more and more integrated into it. And I think a lot of generations also look at, right, I'm not going to call it like toxic masculinity. Once again, this is not a feministic episode. This is purely just like research driven that I did in undergrad and even still to this day. It goes back to the men has to be the role, you know, has to have this role of being the macho man and has to go in and save the day. And what it really comes down to is that it's also going back to a biological component when it comes to women being these roles. Well, women can't meet these standards and, you know, the physical fitness standards, which quite honestly, I will go on a little bit of a side tangent for this. The physical fitness standards in the military are completely entirely fucking stupid. Like, they are so stupid. It is ridiculous because we'll use the Army as an example. So you have the Army physical fitness test, and it is basically you have your age brackets and then the number of like push-ups they have to reach to get a certain score, number of sit-ups to reach, and I think it's like a 3-mile run. Now, obviously, you want to get the perfect score of 300. However, it is literally like at the older you get, the less you have to do. And it's just, it's mind-boggling, which is why like the Air Force has completely different standards, which is why you also call them the Chair Force as the fun nickname. Navy has different standards of physical fitness, Marines, and having a universal standard, and this is both male and female, I should say. So having a same standard creates more of a cohesive unit and a cohesive way of thinking, which leads me to like my next point, if that's okay to make, because now like I'm on my roll with my research. One thing that it was actually done by the military or the Modern War Institute at West Point. So a West Point graduate who is a high ranking officer, I believe their name is Micah Abels, put out basically an op-ed in 2019 stating that women aren't the problem, standards are. So let's keep in mind like the whole biological component of men have to be the stronger ones and women can't do it. The fact being is that, so I'm sorry, I'm like trying to think now. So we'll say like Ranger School, right? So when women first started going to Ranger School, there was like 19 women in Ranger School compared to like the 100 of males. And I believe 2 females passed Ranger School. But what they ended up doing eventually after these testing came out is that they just made the standards equal across the board for females going and wanting to do Ranger School and males going into Ranger School. And by doing that, it didn't make females have to like lower the, it didn't make them lower the standards for males and females. It just made it equal across the board. It should just be equal across the board no matter what. That's my entire point. But I mean, that's like a whole subcategory that we can go into whenever like we want to.
Let's do it. I'm adding it to the list. I think it's really funny, like, to kind of piggyback off the fitness thing. I do pinup at air shows and air shows. Jesus. So I do pinup at air shows, and they usually have enter name of branch here, like Army, Navy, Marines, whatever, and they have that cool physical fitness test. And my friends and I decided in our pinup gear, we're gonna do the physical fitness test because it'd be fun. I want to see if I'm physically fit. We're in like polka dot dresses and heels, pin curls and full face of makeup. And I'm sitting there. I was like the last one out of all of us still doing the physical test in heels. And I'm like doing push-ups like next to a couple like, you know, people dress modern. And like I was like, I got the army guy. Like, I'm like, I'll do it if you do it. And he's like, all right, cool. So he did it. And we're just like sitting there. And I'm like, I'm in heels and a full face makeup with curls. Not even breaking a sweat. These guys are dying on either side of me. And then same thing like with the Marines. They do like that hang test.
Yeah.
And I agree, because they'll do like guys have to do X number of pull-ups and girls have to do a hang.
Yeah.
And I was like, fine, I'll do it. I'm like, you know, full outfit. And they're like, all right, you can have, and they usually have like swag, whatever. And this guy was like, all right, if you can do a hang for a minute, I'll let you have anything on this table. I was like, all right, challenge accepted. And so sure enough, here I am, cute outfit, heels, curls, my hair, just like chilling. Like I'm having a full blown conversation with this guy in like a hang. And like, he looks at his watch and it's like 2 minutes have gone by. He's like, would you like to come down? And I was like,
oh,
why? Are we still? No. Okay. So yes, I agree that like fitness standards need to be different. Cause in all of those scenarios, it was like, you only have to do this. It's like, no, I'm gonna push myself and I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do your standard. Cause that's not fair.
Well, so like this goes into like discussing this further. So why like women should be in these roles. So Heather McDonald wrote an op-ed for Wall Street Journal. Yes. And so her argument was completely against. So this is a female saying, oh, completely against why women should not be in these on-the-ground combat roles. And honestly, I read it and I remember reading it and I just rolled my eyes and I wanted to throw my laptop across like the library. I was mad. Because none of it really makes sense, right? But going back to this, the article that was written by Micah Abels for the Modern Warfare Institute at West Point. You know, he brings up a really great point of physical standards. And right, McDonald and him necessarily agree. They say, okay, physical standards need to be the same across the board. But it's a standard problem. It's not just a women in combat arms problem. You know, she says, there's a problem with gender neutral requirements. But literally that creates the gold standard in combat focused training, is that all across the board, men and women have to reach these standards. That's it. That is your golden ticket to become a ranger, a golden ticket to become a Marine infantry officer, whatever it is, you know, it has to be that way. And so Heather McDonald's argument was, well, having those standards, a neutral standard, is only going to qualify more women, and that's all they care about, is more women becoming into these roles. When in fact, it's designed to ensure that standards were not lowered to only qualify women. So what they could have done and what they were discussing to do, like say, for example, Ranger School, was to have male standards still be relatively the same, and women's standards lower just a little bit for them to basically get in. And so having these neutral standards literally just ensures that both men and female are able to get in. It doesn't matter what it is. If they can do it, they get in. So one thing I should actually point out too with this, is going back to Ranger School, is that Ranger School has always had like neutral standards because they're tied to combat tasks, not age or goals, right? You're a ranger, you go into this combat, you know, this combat role, you have to assess this. It's totally different. Now, one thing I will say too going into this is that comparing and contrasting with McDonald's again, she had pointed out, okay, well, only 2 out of the 36 women have passed Marine Infantry Officer training. Great. 3 out of the first 19 women attempted Ranger School passed. Okay. So gender neutral standards work. That's the point. Like, they work. It's no longer a biological reason to keep women out. It's stupid. Now, so the reason why I say that is because if the standards were lowered or those neutral standards, you know, didn't work, then 36 women would have passed, you know, Marine Infantry School and 19 women would have went into Rangers. Right? If the standards were lowered for females, that would have been the case. They all would have passed with flying freaking colors and would make extreme history. So I'm also going, and the reason why I'm saying this to you is because now I'm like, ooh, all these statistics are popping out with all of these special forces. The reason why I think, like, I even want to really stress this is because, so Navy SEAL training, buds, all males. Candidates have a 20% passing rate. 20% only pass buds. Come on! That's, like, once again, just even thinking about it, only 20%. Going into Ranger school, most of them pass the initial assessment, but then fail out. I think it's, like, 35, or the rates drop for passing for Ranger school is 35%. All male Army Special Forces training consistently hovers around 30% pass rates. Okay. So if there's a 30% pass rate for Special Forces, 35% for Rangers, and 20% for Navy SEALs, and that is all male dominated, why can't women be in these roles if it's a gender neutral standard?
Now I have a question.
Yes.
How do you feel, like, going off of, like, the Navy SEAL thing,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel about movies like G.I. Jane?
I had a feeling this is going to come.
How do you feel, like, the media, like, portrays women? Now, I want to bring up the media because, like, with the Super Bowl that just happened, the flyover was actually led by a female captain. It was, like, the first time in history that that's ever happened. I think is one, like, congratulations to her, because that is big. She is like, you know, certified to drive, you know, fly these insane planes, and it's amazing, and I'm like, hell yes, go girl, good for you, like, that is amazing. And the media highlighted it, like, not at all, because, like, it's the Super Bowl, whatever, but, like, they should have been like, this is cool. Like, hello, and then everyone's like, America. And then you have movies like G.I. Jane that are just like, the whole storyline was designed to get her to break. And not, so I'm curious your thoughts.
So, I guess, I was hoping that we wouldn't have to really dive into this sector until the end.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that's a loaded question. We can revisit.
No, no, no. It's just how my strategic brain works when I talk about these things.
I'm sorry. I've had a drink. I'm like a squirrel.
No, that's okay. I mean, movies like G.I. Jane, yes, it's designed around, like, the entire plot is designed around her to break down and not become, you know, this incredible soldier of some sort. But that is essentially, in the very beginning, what was going on, right? It was also going on during waves and, like, wasps and wax, you know, with all of that. So it's a reoccurring theme throughout military history, is that when women get put into these all-male roles, and they do prove, right, that they are doing far better, exceeding the expectation of their male counterparts, someone is going to come along the line and try to diminish their spirit, their ethic, and really just try to break them down. And I mean, if honestly, that's like, G.I. Jane is like the feministic war cry, if I'm going to be honest, right? Demi Moore is like, I'm not going to freaking break down. I'm going to continue to do this and kick ass. And what does she do? She kicks ass. Okay. But when it comes to media, you know, I really feel like that particular captain should have been highlighted, because that is a huge accomplishment. I know I had, actually, I was an ROTC instructor, and she was beyond just her physical standards, everything, her leadership, She became, I believe, a Black Hawk pilot, and her name was Kelly Carberry, and she was just the epitome of, you look at her and you're like, holy shit, you're going places, because she as a female was air assault qualified, airborne qualified. She got from U of M. She was a commissioned officer from U of M, and then she came back and she taught, and like I said, she was a pilot. And she was just like the embodiment of like, holy shit, if you ever become a woman, like you ever truly become a combat officer, I haven't spoken with her actually in like a couple years, but if you ever were a combat officer and I was being able to become integrated into this role, I want you to be my officer. Like, she paved the way. So like, knowing somebody who's that awesome and incredible, and even knowing that, like, get recognition, right? Which is why I'm talking about her specifically. But, you know, there's women just, I don't think we get accurately portrayed in media when it comes to military roles. I will say maybe there's one film that I can think of at the top of my head. It is a movie called Megan Levy, and it stars Kate Mara. Yes, Kate Mara, and she is a Marine dog handler, and it kind of just goes on like this relationship with them and, you know, her canine, or her being a canine handler for the Marines. And like, that is accurately portrayed in some degree, but still, there's just always some stupid fucking liberty that is taken. And it's, yeah, I see you head and you're like, yep. That's just something that just shouldn't happen, to be honest. Women should be accurately portrayed, but I mean, that's all I'm going to say on that topic, to be honest, because it's just becoming the reoccurring thing during our women's history segment. So,
okay. So now that we've talked about like women in like media, you saw my face. So now that we've talked about like women in like media and how the media portrays us horribly, not all the time, but like in military films. Yes. Moving along to like, you know, you are a woman in a combat unit. Of course, there is going to be, yes, a harassment that comes with that. Me and my historical, like, World War II brain thinking about this and like having a WASP impression, I think back to how the women went through insane training to just ferry planes, not even fly them in like combat roles, just ferry them from factory to base and tow live targets for live target practice. And when they landed, I mean, there are stories of like when they would land, they would get out and they're wearing, you know, oversized HBT coveralls. They have on either saddle shoes, sandals, like Keds, whatever. They're in a full face makeup, and the guys are like, what'd you do to my plane? Like, not even, well, thank you for bringing this. No, what did you do to my plane? And there were a number of women who unfortunately died, like ferrying planes, because there was either sugar in the gas tank or there were rags stuffed in the engines. And obviously, like, they don't say who did it, but you can kind of piece two and two together from the harassment that they got back in the 40s. So, like, what are your thoughts or the statistics or anything on harassment with women in the military
today? Historically speaking, it is very rampant. This is something that I thought originally when this first came out would probably persuade me against women being in combat arms, to be very, like, to be honest. Women all across the military for decades have been harassed, whether it's just general harassment, sexual harassment, and even sexually assaulted. And one of the biggest fears, and one of the things that they have done research on heavily, is the whole sexual harassment, sexual assault component, right? Because if there are only a handful of females that are in these combat arm units, then it's very possible and very likely that one of them will become a victim of sexual assault or sexual harassment. However, there also has to be a standard that is met across the board. you know, sexual liaisons, rivalries, power imbalances, breakups, all this has been present in the military for millennia. And I'm going to say long before females have joined the combat arms units. It's a fact. Now, it's really just comes on the basis of holding, you know, you are a male officer and you have to hold your platoon to a standard, right? Do not sexually assault or have inappropriate relations with other female soldiers or sailors or whatever it is within your unit. And if they break it, right, something happens, you have to report it. That is the standard across the board. However, what we are finding more and more, and what we're seeing in the news and seeing through studies, is that so many females, and this is not even just saying within a combat arm unit, like this is just all across the military, they will not report a sexual assault or sexual harassment in fear of retaliation, right? Because females are still minorities, or like we are a minority group in the military. And so retaliation is a huge thing that will happen. It might get passed up, but then it just suddenly disappears. You know, there is the Military Code of Justice, or the UCMJ, which really goes into detail about how everything needs to be set to a standard, and you have to report this and this and this, and there's this chain of command. And most of the time, it just stops there. However, you know, if I was an officer, right, say I was a male officer, I would expect my soldiers not to beat their spouses, right, or drive drunk. But does that mean we should ban marriage or driving in combat units? No, it literally just means that they need to do a better job enforcing standards and discipline as long as women are in these roles. And, you know, that was actually something, and I will like kind of briefly talk about this. I know I mentioned it in one of our episodes before. When I was in the works of enlisting, going back through the process of MEPS and talking to a recruiter and getting my contract and everything, you know, I was still very set on MI, which is military intelligence, and going to OCS and all this other stuff. But it was brought to my attention, especially with my degree and ASVAB score, that I would have been an excellent candidate and one of the first candidates to become a combat arms unit officer. And at first I was like, oh, that'd be so great. I could make history. This would be awesome. And then this was like 2015, 2016. So right when women are being integrated into these roles. And I remember reaching out to my cousin, who is a high ranking officer in the Army. And I had asked him his thoughts on it. I had talked to another friend who was an officer and asked their input on it, because they were both in, you know, combat arms roles, both as officers. And one of them had stated, you know, definitely don't do it if you're lower enlisted, but maybe think about if you're an officer, but at the same time, be very cautious, or just kind of wait it out. And you could always reclass if you wanted to. And so I weighed heavy on it, and I decided if that was going to be the case, I would just reclass later if, you know, I was able to enlist, because that means within like 3 years, all the kinks would have been worked out and I would have been possibly a captain at the time. Yeah, something like that. So that was something that I really thought heavy on, because the reason why they also told me to wait was because of sexual assault, sexual harassment. Even if I was air assault, airborne qualified, I kicked ass at physical standards, there still would be some form of sexual harassment and, you know, attempts of sexual assault, more or less, which is very unfortunate. And it goes back to holding that standard and making sure that every sexual assault, every sexual harassment gets reported, making sure that every stupid freaking male in the military actually pays attention to the sexual assault and sexual harassment training that they have to go through yearly. So that's basically the biggest threat to women being in combat, you know, these combat arms units or roles. It's not the standards, right? Because if it came down to it, you know, say for example, Blake and I'm just going to use backpacking as a reference because we just went backpacking this weekend. Say a wildfire just randomly bursted out in the Appalachians and, you know, Blake was knocked unconscious, but I'm still conscious. I am 5'3". My husband, like, you know, Blake's like 6'1". He's almost a foot taller than me. I don't know how many pounds heavier than me. I'm going to say 75. And if you can hear me, I love you so very much. Please don't be mad at me. And so if it came down to it, I, because of adrenaline, could physically fireman carry him down if I had to, or drag him down, or be resourceful and figure out a way to drag him out of that situation. So that is not a problem whatsoever. You know, right? That shouldn't be a boundary. You know, the mentality shouldn't be a boundary, because women can really make more even keel decisions than men. Which I think is something that needs to be said. But like, as I've just said, like, the biggest threat is sexual harassment and sexual assault. Like, that is the true threat to women being in these roles.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, now I have a question. Speaking of, like, going through the process of, like, recruiting and things like that, how do you think the military academies fare in all of this? Because do you think, like, with the Navy Academy, with West Point, with
Air Force,
you know, the Virginia Military Institute, how do you think, like, I mean, they're not only going through, like, you know, becoming an officer and everything like that, but they're also getting a college degree, like, while they're there. So you're going through, like, two phases in life at once, basically. Especially going through college. Like, you want to have, like, a normal college experience, but at the same time, like, it's not going to be normal. Because, like, you have these different standards in place. Do you feel like those officers, like, you know, it's kind of like millennials today. Like, when we are hitting 30, like, this year, like, are things going to change? Because now, you know, this is a horrible example, but the most recent one popping into my head, like, Gen Zers, or Gen whatever, people are telling us it's not cool to part our hair on the side anymore, or wear, like, high-waisted jeans. No, I will forever part my hair on the side and wear high-waisted jeans, because they look best on me. Now, I'm gonna try different stuff, because, like, you're trying to implement different things. Do you feel like that is, like, the new officers coming into, like, the military? Like, we're gonna try different stuff, we're gonna implement different things, or do you feel like there's a backlash? Like, do you know what I'm trying to say?
I think I have a general idea. This is something across the board with military. With military, I'm just thinking. Sorry. A lot of, I'll say, like, NCOs and lower enlisted, say, for example, have a new fresh officer straight from West Point, we'll say, or even, like, any, you know, university that has an ROTC program. They are very straight by the book, very gung ho about those things. They hate them with every fiber being in their soul. So that's why I was chuckling, because that's why it was going back to, like, talking about me trying to enlist, because I didn't want to go straight to OCS. I wanted to do basic training, have maybe, like, a year or so under my belt, 2 years of, like, being in the quote-unquote trenches, knowing what lower enlisted to go through, knowing what NCOs have to deal with, and then go into OCS, because you get a lot more respect that way. I do feel like females, whether it's an ROTC program, whether it's they're at VMI, West Point, Annapolis, Air Force Academy, Coast Guard Academy, whatever it is, always have to prove themselves more, no matter what, as a leader, because women in these type of roles tend to get their leadership, most of the time their leadership is overlooked. And that's why I also wanted to point out Kelly, because, like I said, she was an outstanding leader across the board. You know, she really went to bat for her, you know, for her cadets. I can't remember her name, but she was a colonel. Oh my God, this is going to kill me. She was a colonel, and she was actually head of Michigan's ROTC program when I was there. And she also, just her presence, like, she walked in and you're just like, holy crap, you know your shit, you are amazing. Like, she, any chance I could talk to her, I would like run up to her and I would talk to her about stuff, and it's killing me that I can't remember what her name is. Oh my God. But she was just, like I said, she was just the most even keeled, could look at you, tell you a strategy that she wanted to implement. She also went to bat for her cadets. She also would challenge her cadets. And I think women, historically, we are supposed to not challenge the status quo. We are not supposed to speak up. We are supposed to stay in these roles. And the females that go into these programs don't want to be a part of that. They don't, like, they want to speak up. They want to be these excellent leaders because their leadership skills and the ones that they've acquired, whether it's through a program or it's who they've been pretty much throughout their entire life, really fit into these amazing roles and can transform combat arms roles through and through, can really give a different perspective as to these different strategies, looking at something in a different light. And it's not going back to the whole masculine way of thinking, right, when men are like, well, we're just going to go into tanks and shoot guns and all this other crap. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there is a whole different perspective on it. And that is one of the reasons why, too, going back to me and doing the whole recruitment process, that was one of the biggest reasons why the recruiter was giving me the option, because of my leadership style, because of how I am as a person, knowing that there's that different perspective. But I knew that there was going to be challenges because I also saw it through friends who went through the ROTC program at U of M. And, you know, we still see it today, right? It's incredible. I can't remember. Gosh, I'm so terrible at names today. But there, I can't remember her name, but she was the first, not only just first female, but first Black female cadet at West Point to command all of West Point. And like, she had this entire article written about her, which I think is phenomenal, but it just, you know, they were asking her like, well, what does it mean, you know, to be a female? And it's like, why didn't you talk about her fucking leadership style, her leadership skills? Like, why does it have to be, what does it mean to be a female and having this rule? Screw that crap. How does it feel to be a leader of one of the most prestigious military academies? Like, just thinking about it too, because before I actually switched, you know, because I was going to continue on with history. I was going to get my master's in military history. And then I opted not to because I wasn't quite ready to go into PhD and just go become a teacher right away. But I remember, because I did halfway, I actually should have completed it now that I'm thinking about it, but I did 1 year at Norwich University, which is one of the most prestigious military schools outside of like West Point, Annapolis. And I was challenged every single time I wrote a paper by my professors and even just like a discussion board. And the rest of my class was male. And they would be like, well, I think you're this and this is wrong, blah, blah, blah. And I literally was like, the person above me that has a dick literally said pretty much the same thing. Excuse me? No. You know, and even going through that process, and this is just like for a graduate degree, earning a military history degree and military leadership certification, even during my interview process, it was so rigorous. It was ridiculous. And I remember even asking in like my interview, I was like, do you do this to male candidates? Like, this is stupid. I could easily tell you the difference and break down this war. And, you know, so that was just, as I said, that was just for a graduate program. Like, imagine being a female cadet in these institutions and having to go through the ringer just because you're a female. And constantly have your leadership being questioned because you're a female. You know, this is what these women still are facing in these combat arms roles, whether they're an officer or possibly a lower enlisted. They're constantly being looked at and be like, because you know what you're talking about. And it's like, I think I do. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, I had a guy the other day. Was talking to him, and he goes, we were talking about the podcast, And I feel like this goes for women who are just, you know, generally interested in military history, you know, who aren't enlisted, like you and I. And he goes, well, what's your podcast about? And I told him, well, it's, you know, my one of my good friends and I, we get together and we drink and we talk about military history or obscure wars or different topics, you know, related to military. And he goes, have you ever served? Or do you know somebody who that serves? And I'm like, yeah, I know lots of people that have served. I've never served, but like, I've thought about it multiple times, but like, at the end of the day, I like no. I like the word no, and I would be terrible at boot camp. And no, I support, but like, I support my friends that go, like, but I would be horrible at boot camp. So he goes, well, why do you think you're qualified to talk about warfare if you've never served?
I attempted, but I have kidney stones.
I was like, I've thought about it multiple times, but like, I have worked in a museum for 10 plus years. I'm generally interested in this. And you know what? This goes back to what we were talking about before we started recording. There was a article that was posted on We Happy Few, and which is a podcast led by Matt Leach, who was an original cast member of the Band of Brothers. And they host a weekly Zoom on Saturdays. And if you look, most of the audience that buys tickets to each of their events are female. And someone wrote an article about it as to why there was mostly females, because they were surprised. And they genuinely thought, their first thought was, well, the cast is well cast. They're very cute, all of them. They are. I mean, like a man in uniform just as much as the next person. 40s uniforms were primes, why we brought them back. But I digress. And we were talking about this too. Like, a lot of the times, since women couldn't have been in military combat roles back then, we are trying to, one, we're genuinely interested in this. Two, we want to connect with that on some level. And we weren't allowed to back in the 40s. We were never there in that role. So like, we will never hear of a story unless it's like Renee, who's like on the front lines, or an Army Nurse Corps, or, you know, a WAC or a WAVE or whatever. And those stories are so far and few in between that we're trying to like connect. So I feel like sometimes we overcompensate and just be like, I want to learn as much, if not more, than the guy next to me, to be like, so I can go to an event like D-Day Kaniya and be like, yes, this is a FLAC 88. It's one of the only operating FLAC 88s in the world. And here's X, Y, and Z all about this stuff. And just give you like a rundown on how a German anti-aircraft gun works. Because you have to be like genuinely interested in this stuff. And I was like, I like just let him have it. I'm like, how dare you? Like, and he just goes, ugh, modern women.
You know,
so I feel like the, like, just, yeah.
No, I mean, that is a very, very, very valid frustration, because this is what these women are dealing with in these, you know, combat roles. I mean, granted, I know plenty of incredible, just forward-thinking men who are Army Rangers, who are in special forces, infantry units, you know, anything along those lines, who are like, sure, bring them on in, right? But that is a very small percentage in the military. It goes to show that's the way that we need to think, right? Because what is it going to take? Another, I can't believe I'm saying this, but another disaster to where there is this meaningless formal ban on women in combat arms units, right? Like, as it was evident after post 9/11, right? You know, if women are willing to lay down their lives and go into this role, then you should let them. If women are willing, and I'm not saying all women, because I'm sure I know plenty of people who probably be like, I'm not signing up for the draft. That's a different topic for another day. But, you know, signing up for the draft specifically, or even just volunteering for it, you know, if people are so hellbent, or some men are so hellbent on us being modern women, then honestly, fuck off. Plain and simple. Like, just fuck off. Like, I don't care. I don't want to hear it. Like, you know, there's...
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. I'm sorry, I hurt your ego. Or because I know more than you do. And you're just...
I'm sorry that my leadership style is far better and superior than yours. Like, that is why I could command a platoon. I mean, regardless, not me specifically, I'm just saying for, like, other women, you know, there's... It's just, it's one of those situations where it's so annoying because there were a number of programs even before women becoming integrated into combat arms units, you know, like FETs, which are female engagement teams. So they were brought around or established in 2003, so beginning of the Iraq War, right? Because there's a barrier, you know, Muslim women cannot talk with another male that is not their husband. So... how else is the American, you know, the U.S. side of things going to get intel or try to establish a relationship with the locals if they also can't engage with the women, right? So we are trying to be culturally appropriate, making sure that we're not crossing a line. So this is when female engagement teams come into play. They are basically an all unit of women who go out, engage with other females of the Muslim culture, try to establish more so a rapport, get to know them. And they, I will say, are kind of on the ground combat. I wouldn't necessarily call it combat. It would be more communication based or, MI based, but you know, I've heard the argument of, we'll make the FETs stronger. And it's like, okay, so we're not integrating the military. Like, we already know through our episode of the Night Witches, right, that women and all women unit can be, do amazing and incredible things. But that's not what we're working for. We are now working to integrate women into these roles because they have proven, not just in the U.S., but all across the globe, that women can do these roles, so why not integrate them? The Israeli army does it. Why the heck can't we? The Russian military does it. The Swedish military does it. Like, all of these.
Because I'll give you one reason why. I'll give you one reason why. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but... it's gonna
I was gonna say male egos,
which is just like so. It's frustrating because, like, you see it with, like, you know, the Night Witches. You see it with Annie Etheridge. You see it with all these things, and they're just like, we're gonna celebrate these women. We're gonna, like, and I want to, like, go back to the point of, like, you know, males being like, yeah, bring them on in, and to your point of, like, yes, there are so, like. There are such a small number of guys that do that. It's like, we need, and I was talking to this, a friend about this week, and I was like, we need to normalize that. It is not me coming in, threatening your ego. It is literally, if you were in class with somebody and that they knew more than you, you're going to partner up with that person that knows more than you, whether you're struggling in the class or not, if you like them, whatever. But, like, if you're, like, in, let's say, lab together and you're put with, like, a smart person, you're like, heck yeah, I got a smart person. Not that you're going to slack off, but, like, you are, you know, you are with – it's not a threatening situation. So, like, you know, you get to the military where their guys are like, guns and bro time and America. And then you have, like, this, like, small, like, 5-6 female coming in being like, all right. Round your shit up. We're going on a 6-mile hike. No water. Let's go. Like, they're like, oh, what the? And, like, you need, like, a small group of guys to, like, back her up and be like, yeah, we're going. Like, John Basil on that shit. Like, when he walks in the barracks in the Pacific and be like, grab your gear. The hell are you doing? Everybody get out here. We're going on a 12-mile hike. Let's go. Somebody just took some pre-workout. Like, oh.
I mean,
all right.
It really does come into it because it really does. Male ego is so fragile.
What's fragile?
The male ego.
The male ego.
I mean, No, if this is truly like no.
So we just need to normalize it. Not normalize male ego, but like normalize males supporting women.
Well, yes.
Because they should be doing that anyway.
That's actually something that I totally agree with. And I wanted to make a like point for any male listeners. We have any male listeners. Like, this episode isn't meant to really dog on you. It's just meant to really share and showcase the frustrations and reasons why women should be in combat arms units. You know, especially officer roles specifically. And, you know I touched base on like my personal experience with going through briefly about the process and why I was asked to go into possibly a role. And it's also going to, right, you spoke about the qualifications. I'm going to ask why we're so qualified to be having a warfare podcast. The reason why I'm saying that is because all across the board, women are qualified for these jobs in combat arms units. You know, I will say so many women that I know, if they are very passionate about something, they can learn everything about it. And it's just, you just need to support women. You know, it's no longer, the military is no longer a boys club. It's done. It's over with. If you're listening and you're in the military, hold your fellow male soldiers, airmen, sailors, Marines to the standard that is in the UCMJ, which leads me to a point that I actually wanted to make when we were talking about sexual assault. So I'm going to kind of dial it back a little bit because it goes to that standard, right? So I think it was 2019. I don't remember what SEAL team specifically it was, but nonetheless, it was a SEAL team. They were sent back from Iraq because there was a sexual assault that was reported and none of them were coming forward about what had happened. So they decided to pull the SEAL team. That is not okay. Yes, and then pulling the SEAL team from the mission because that is totally screwed up. That is just fucked up beyond measure. However, you, regardless if you're a SEAL and you feel like you're untouchable, regardless if you're special forces, even if you're fucking Delta Force or you are a grunt, hold your fellow male soldiers, airmen, sailors, all across the board, hold them to the standard of the UCMJ and report that shit, because women belong in these roles. End of story.
And we do have like a lot of listeners overseas too that do know a lot about like US military from like World War II. I don't know about like how much they know about modern warfare, but like that should be across the board. That shouldn't be like just solely to the military. Yes. That should be across the board, because you better not be thinking with your other brain. You better be thinking with your actual brain and like do the right thing. See something, say something, you see something, stop something, like, and just don't do it. Just be a good, decent human being. Like, there's not enough, like, gentlemen in the world anymore. Is chivalry dead? I don't know. Do I have to come? This is why women take on the adaptation of, like, I have to be my own knight in shining armor.
Yes.
Because that has not been normalized in such a long time.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's,
yeah, but I digress. That's a topic for another review. Alyssa, what are your final thoughts on this episode?
I have so many final thoughts.
I know you have many.
I have so many final thoughts. Because, like I've already mentioned, I've researched this. I have almost been a part of this. I have great female military leaders, so I know. I think as long as our policies... as long as the policies continue to evolve, the standards are gender neutral, as long as there continues to be an integration, everyone holds each other accountable with the UCMJ and those specific standards of reporting sexual harassment, sexual assaults, ensuring that no female soldier, airman, Marine, and sailor you know, feels like they're going to be retaliated against if they report this, or report anything of that nature happening. I think women can truly, truly, truly showcase their leadership abilities without being questioned. If you are someone who is in the military and you have a leader, whether they are an NCO, whether they are, you know, your commanding officer, whatever the case is, if you know somebody and you know that their leadership style is amazing, please go and fucking tell them, because there's some dickhead who's questioning it and it shouldn't be questioned, you know, unless there's a true valid reason. But I suggest everybody reading, doing like the comparing and contrasting, as I talked about with Heather McDonald's article for Wall Street Journal, as well as the Modern Warfare Institute at West Point's article by Micah Abels. Definitely read them, compare, contrast. Sure, I guess in a way, get your own opinion on this topic. But before you even question or say anything and do the whole biological concept, please do that. Just research the crap out of it and look at it. If you are in the military, ask people the standards. And, you know, if you want to and you feel like you need to write an email, whether it's good or bad, direct it towards Alyssa Adkins with her email. And
Women on War. I want to do this juicy gossip too. Please. Like, y'all give me life at work when I check an email or two on my lunch break. So thank you for that.
Oh, man. What are your final thoughts? Or did I sum it up?
Basically summed it up. I'm going to say what I've said, I think, in the last, like, three times I've talked, is we need to start normalizing that it's okay for men to feel okay with having a woman in charge. And it's not necessarily, like, you know, me being all gung-ho, we don't need any men in control anymore. No, that's not, like, my point. My point is just, like, you need to recognize that in any role, whether it be work, whether it be the military, whether it be in school, there is going to be a person that might know more than you. Jesus, what is in that drink? So it's okay to feel like your ego is a bit bruised, but don't lean on that and be like, oh, but I'm a guy, I should know more about science and I should know more about math and I should know more about combat strategies, because I guarantee you she is restraining herself because she doesn't want to beat you into a pulp.
Unless you're me, then I will gladly beat a pulp.
It's just like that guy. Like, what makes you qualified? What makes you qualified to be an asshole? Like,
the fact that you have one?
Excuse me. So, to all of our wonderful male listeners, and I've talked with, you know, several friends who are like, we love your podcast. We think it's great. You guys are bringing things to light. You're sharing your opinions on things. We never realized that this is how people felt. Again, this is going to be an educational podcast, and like, I'm glad we're talking about these things, but we need to make sure it is normal for us to feel like that, whether it be a woman in a combat leadership role or a woman in general in combat. Women can hold our own. We've proved that we can hold our own, and we will continue to do so. You just need to get over yourself
a little bit.
That's all for us this week, folks. You guys have a great rest of your week. Email us, write to us on Instagram, share us with your friends, and we look forward to starting our next series with you next Wednesday.